Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably. Have you seen any films this week, Lewis?
Oh, I have.
Yeah, good.
Thank you for asking. I was going to ask you, but yeah. I know for a fact you haven't.
Well, that's what the whole point, isn't it?
That's it.
For the whole point. We had talked about it beforehand, so I ask you. So, what films have you seen this week, then?
I've seen The Green Man, which you recommended.
Yeah, well, not so much recommended. I had it, so that's all right.
A glowing recommendation there from Mr. Ian. Alistair Sim film from back in the 60s, I think.
Very early film, actually. George Cole, pretty much a baby in it.
Baby?
Yeah, it's like a fetus. He's so young looking. Terry Thomas. Yeah, it's good, isn't it? But it's not...
It's not amazing. It's all right. Alistair Sim's amazing. And Terry Thomas has the amazing line, "For like a right Charlie."
Yeah, exactly. It's the way he pronounces Charlie.
Charlie.
What else did you see?
I also watched Killer Joe.
The thingamajig.
The thingamajig film.
Yeah, what's his name?
William Friedkin.
That's it. Yeah.
Back on sort of form. It was okay. It was based on a play, and it kind
like
of
the Green Man.
Like the Green Man. It felt like a play as well.
Like the Green Man.
Like the Green Man.
That was probably the first time ever Killer Joe and the Green Man have been compared.
It's true. You heard it here, folks. It has a very disturbing scene with a chicken drumstick, which I won't go into.
Not like the Green Man.
No. They really part ways at that point.
Yeah, the chicken drumstick bit. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I read afterwards that it actually is meant to be a black comedy.
That's always better when you have to read that afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, well. But this week...
This week we're doing a stone-cold Hollywood classic.
Yeah, a film that you had recommended.
Yes.
You love this film so much.
You've got a
poster of it on your wall.
I have. We're looking at it right
now. Poster on your wall.
That's right.
You hung it up on your wall.
I don't know what that was.
That's supposed to be Ringo Starr from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Love the picture you sent me. I hung it on my wall. It's that.
It is. Yes, it's Sunset Boulevard.
Sunset Boulevard.
The Billy Wilder classic from 1950. This is my recommendation, also recommended by Connor Barrett.
Ah, he's one of our big fans, isn't he?
Big fans, yeah. We haven't heard from him for a while. Maybe he's stopped listening. That's because we haven't done any of his films, right?
Well, we're doing it now.
We're doing it now, Connor.
We're doing it now, Connor.
This just goes as a lesson to all you listeners who recommend films. Just hang in there. We'll get around to it eventually.
We will get there eventually.
Anyway, so Sunset Boulevard, fantastic film. I really love this film.
When did you first see this film?
I saw it only a couple of years ago, actually. So I only discovered it really relatively recently, but I absolutely fell in love with it. It was a fantastic film.
Mm. Yeah, well, this is obviously my first time of watching it. And yeah, it's very, very good. Very much enjoyed it. Wasn't what I was expecting at all.
Oh, that's interesting. What were you expecting?
I have no idea, actually, because I didn't really know anything about it. When I do try my best, when I don't really know much about a film, and I'm watching it for the first time for this podcast, I do try and avoid reading anything about it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think I thought the Sunset Boulevard, I think perhaps I thought it was going to be a bit more, I don't know, like a bombastic, over-the-top, perhaps even musical.
It did get turned into a musical.
Oh, did it really?
It did.
When?
1993.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
That can't be good.
Well, apparently it lost money.
So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I can almost imagine the kind of songs they would do as well.
Yeah.
And that would have
been good. There was one very famous Sunset Boulevard, Sunset Boulevard.
I mean, maybe that's where it lodged itself in my subconscious, which is why I kind of was expecting a musical. I don't know.
There was a lot of hoo-ha about it.
There was. So what's the pitch?
The pitch is a glimpse into the future of Lady Gaga.
I mean, that's perhaps giving Madame Gaga a little bit too much credence, too much longevity.
I don't know. I just, when I was watching Gloria Swanson, I just thought, God, she looks so much like Lady Gaga.
Take
note.
So it's all about a silent film star.
That's right, yeah. And it's Gloria Swanson plays Norma Desmond, who is a massive star in the 20s. And then with the advent of talkies, she faded into obscurity. But in her mind, she's still the greatest star that ever was.
Yeah.
She kind of lives in this crumbling house on Sunset Boulevard with a sinister butler.
Yes, and she's discovered by Joe Gillis, played by William Holden. A struggling Hollywood writer, screenwriter.
A hack, really.
Yeah.
Hack writer.
On the run from his from people trying to repossess his car. Things are not going too well for Joe.
Yeah, and he kind of turns up, he blows a tire and ends up turning into Gloria Swanson's garage, well, Norma Desmond's garage.
Yeah, and it's just drawn into her life, drawn into
Well, she sucks him in like a queen spider.
Yeah,
she?
Yeah. It's very hard to escape.
He basically ends up becoming her gigolo. That's pretty much it.
Yes, that is it. Yeah, and that was pretty common, as I understand it, back in
youth.
No, back in the sort of the Hollywood of that era, it was relatively common for. I'm sure it's still common now for older women.
What are you basing this on?
David Niven's autobiography.
Ah, well, there we go.
Moon's a Balloon. great book, really recommend it. And a lot of his stories are all about. It's actually a really interesting book. We'll talk more about that later. But yeah, he talks about the kind of prevalence of older women and perhaps younger men.
We might call them cougars nowadays.
Yeah, well, it happens nowadays. And yeah, let's be honest, there's plenty of older men going out with younger women.
Yeah,
it's just that they tend to flash their younger women off a little bit more than the women flashing their younger men off. So obviously, I mean, you absolutely love this film.
Yeah, I think it's great. What did you think of it?
Yeah, as I say, I really did enjoy it. It has a streak of darkness to it, which I wasn't expecting.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it's a minor spoiler to say it's it opens with a dead body.
Well, it's a very famous opening scene,
yeah,
with a dead body floating in a swimming pool.
Swimming pool. So straight away, it draws you in, and there's a surprisingly almost cynical about Hollywood. A Hollywood film which isn't frightened to sort of face its own excesses.
Yeah.
And face the way it takes people and chews them up and spits them out.
Yeah, in a way it's surprising it got made, just because it's so critical of the Hollywood system.
It really illustrates how fleeting fame is for the vast majority of people, and even those who are incredibly famous within a few years will be forgotten. I always mention the guy at work who doesn't know who John Wayne is. But that's because he's 10 years younger than me, and his parents were that little bit younger than my parents, so they wouldn't have watched so many John Wayne films as my parents did.
Yeah.
So it's just not part of the kind of things he's been exposed to.
Yeah.
It's not, on the Oscar nights where they show all those, the Who We Have Lost. And you see these people picking up Oscars in the sort of 50s and 40s and even 60s. And you're like, who are they?
Yeah.
They're completely forgotten now.
Exactly. I mean, there's a few of the silent film stars whose names are still household names, like Charlie Chaplin and
Buster Keaton
and that. But, you know, others have just completely drifted into obscurity. I mean, Mary Pickford was a huge star in her day, and I doubt many people would know who she is nowadays.
No, well, I only recognise the name simply because of doing research for this film.
Yeah, but she was, one of the pretty much the biggest star at the time. So it just goes to show, it's like...
life.
Fame is a fleeting thing.
It certainly is. Yeah. Oh, well, one day our time will be gone, Lewis. Our massive fame will have ended. And all we have is our memories in these podcasts.
Exactly. And all our fan letters to read and read again.
And our butler.
Anyway, should we do the trivia quiz?
Yes.
Okay, question one. The film was nominated for 11 Academy Awards. I think it's the second highest number of awards ever.
Right, okay.
Nominated for. But it only won 3. Can you name one of the awards that it won? I'll give you a hint. It's probably not the big ones.
Okay. Best Supporting Performance. Best Supporting Artist.
No. It was Best Screenplay.
I was going to say Best Screenplay. Then you said, it's not the ones you'd think.
Well, I was thinking you were going to say Best Picture or something like that.
No.
Best Screenplay, Best Art and Set Direction, and Best Music are the ones it won.
Oh, well.
Question two. So I said earlier that it's actually got turned into a musical in 1993.
Yes, you did.
Who did the music for the musical?
Oh, God. Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Yes. Straight away.
That's a complete guess.
Yeah. He's got his finger in all the pies.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
And question three. In the scene with Cecil B. DeMille, what film is he shooting? And he was actually shooting this film in real life.
Oh, no idea.
Okay, it was Samson and Delilah.
Right, okay. Okay.
But yeah, interesting that actually was the set of the actual film we were shooting at the time.
Oh, no, very interesting. Okay, question one. What was the name of the 1939 film that William Holden made his name in? And it was kind of like considered his key performance. And didn't really have... He works during the 1940s, but everyone thought he was kind of a bit of a has-been because he sort of made a splash with this film and then didn't really have anything quite as good until Sunset Boulevard.
Ooh, that's a tricky one. I've no idea. I'm going to say Cleopatra.
Cleopatra. It was actually Golden Boy.
Golden Boy.
Golden Boy, yeah. Which kind of is quite ironic because he was then considered the Golden Boy. And then he didn't quite achieve it until the 50s. And then Billy Wilder sort of changed his career.
Mm.
Question two. Now, considering the subject matter of the film, the actual film was slightly controversial and there were a few people quite worried about it in Hollywood. So much so that the director, Billy Wilder, kind of started production under a code name. Do you know the code name of the film?
Oh, was it something like Can of Beans or something like that?
That's right, yes, it was a Can of Beans.
Yeah, that's it. I read about this, that they were just submitting the script like two or three pages at a time to try and get around anyone kind of going, oh no, you can't make this.
Okay, and question three, as you mentioned earlier in your questions, Cecil B. DeMille, it makes a cameo appearance in the film, playing himself. And actually, where he was recording his film was a place he often recorded. He made lots of his films on this particular stage. In the film, it's just referred to as Stage 18, but it was actually referred to as the DeMille Stage.
Mm.
It since has been renamed after a famous sci-fi franchise. What is that sci-fi franchise?
Oh, is it Star Wars?
Ooh, close. I'm afraid it's Star Trek.
Oh!
Paramount Studios. Star Trek.
Close. They're the same, right? Star Trek, Star Wars.
Yeah, well, they're both going to be directed by J.J. Abrams.
I suppose so. He's got his fingers in lots of pies as well.
He's got loads of, yeah.
He's got loads of pies.
He's got
loads
more
of
pies
fingers
than fingers.
Jesus.
It's unbelievable.
So, going back to the film, directed by Billy Wilder, who has directed a surprisingly large number of amazing films.
Mm.
I mean, The Apartment is one of your favourites, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a fantastic film.
And he's also done, what's he done? Some Like It Hot.
It's weird that he's not... Well, it's wrong to say he's not well known, because he obviously is, but... I mean, everyone knows Hitchcock, for example.
Yes, yeah.
But there's no film coming out called Wilder.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, he did so much for kind of American cinema, and he was so talented, and he could work across genres. He could work in comedy, worked in noir, he worked in all sorts of stuff.
He was quite a character as well, by the sounds of things. Yeah, reading some of the way he worked and his interactions with people. Apparently, towards the end of his life, he just would basically get called pretty much every other day with people asking if they could remake Sunset Boulevard. He would just say, "I don't own the rights," and then just hang up.
But yeah, I mean, he's an absolutely fantastic director. He also directed Double Indemnity, which many people say is like the best ever noir made. But although I've never seen it. I'm ashamed to say I've never seen it.
Well, interestingly, this film is considered a noir film.
Yes, well, it's quite noirish, but perhaps it
has its elements.
It's got a femme fatale, but it's very different from perhaps what you think of as a canonical noir.
I suppose it does start with a mystery about how a man is killed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's almost like the film, the audience itself is forced to work it out. There's no detective solving the case. It's
just
the audience piecing things together as the story's told.
Exactly. And to be honest, it's more about the power struggle between Joe and Norma, really.
Yeah.
And what a fantastic performance as well by Gloria Swanson.
But I mean, what in particular, what is it about Billy Wilder's direction that makes it so good?
It's difficult to say. I mean, a lot of the film is actually from the actual kind of sets and the way the actors kind of interact with each other. I don't think there's anything you could say, you watched a film and said, oh yeah, that's Billy Wilder's trademark.
No.
Maybe that's perhaps why he's not so well known as, say, perhaps. I don't know.
I think he uses, there are lots of interesting kind of visual tricks that he uses in the film. Mm. Certainly, I mean, the opening shot where you see the dead body floating in the swimming pool.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great shot because they shoot it from below the water, and you're kind of looking up at this lifeless body with all the policemen kind of milling around.
Did you read how they actually did that shot?
How did they do it?
It's really interesting. They tried, because there was actually a different opening shot originally.
Okay.
There was a different opening sequence that tested really badly. Mm. Originally, what was going to happen is that the film opens with the body being brought into a mortuary, and then there are other bodies in the mortuary, and then the bodies start talking to each other and saying how they died.
Right.
And apparently everyone just laughed during this sequence.
It does sound a bit comical.
Yeah, and it kind of, they thought, oh, it really sets the wrong tone for the rest of the film. Mm. Because the film has some funny moments, but it's not an out-and-out comedy.
No, it's more like a wry smile.
Yeah, definitely. So they decide to change it, and of course they end up with this quite iconic opening shot of the body floating in the swimming pool. But you see that the perspective is from underneath the water, looking up at the body floating.
How did they get a waterproof camera?
Well, no, what they actually did was that they set it up so there was a mirror at the bottom of the pool.
Ah.
And then they set the camera up so the camera was then looking at the mirror. And then they had to test it several times to get the water just the right temperature.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too wavy and distorting the actual image.
Ah.
So apparently they found the exact right temperature, something like 40 degrees or 41 degrees. And then they kept it at that temperature. And that way you could then see. Because they wanted the face of the victim to be slightly distorted, but also kind of recognisable at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember the first time I watched it, I kind of was like, I wasn't quite sure if it was the same guy.
Yeah.
And I think you were the same, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
no, it is slightly clear, but that was on purpose. It's slightly ambiguous.
Yeah.
But what a great shot. A very ingenious way of getting it done.
Yeah, yeah, it's really clever.
Apparently the one of the characters in the film is actually a really small cast, isn't it? It's only about five or six people, isn't it?
Yeah, like, basically four main characters and that's it.
But Gloria's butler, played by
Eric von Stroheim,
who himself was actual director, who in turn directed Gloria in real life when they were younger.
Yeah, that's right, because there's a bit where they show a clip of a film
directed by Eric, starring Gloria when she was younger. Apparently, during the filming, he spent the whole time just kind of watching Billy Wilder, seeing what he was doing, how he was setting up the shots. Because I guess if you're a director who is from a time before talkies, the technology and just the way films are shot must have changed a fair bit in that time.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a great bit, actually, with where Norma Desmond visits the set of Cecil B. DeMille and the microphone just kind of ends up brushing against her hat.
Oh, yes,
and
she kind of
irritatedly bats it away.
Bats it away, yeah. I thought that was a great moment, yeah. What I felt about the film is it feels very modern, similar to like Some Like It Hot, similar to The Apartment. They all have a almost timeless quality about them.
Yeah, definitely. It's a real classic. It stands up so well today. I watched it again last night and I was absolutely gripped from start to finish, even though I've seen it before.
Mm.
I couldn't take my eyes off the
screen. The great thing, it grabs you from the get-go. So going back to Gloria Swanson and her performance as Norma.
She just blew me away off the screen. I mean, the way she portrays Norma Desmond is fantastic, particularly if you look at her hands. Like, she's always doing something with her hands in every scene.
Definitely.
She's like always kind of almost claw-like hands.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're like claws, aren't they?
There's that great bit where she pulls in Joe for the kiss, like their first kiss.
Mm.
And she does the kind of claw hands.
I don't know if this was on purpose or it reflects simply my limited exposure to silent films, but she really reminded me of like Nosferatu.
Yes, yeah.
The claws, the look in the eyes, the kind of heavily made up sort of eyes, and the big stares as well. And I think, I don't know, because I guess that's where, Nosferatu and Charlie Chaplin are probably the two most common clips of silent films I've seen. I must admit, I've not seen many silent films. But I mean, that's imprinted on my mind. That's what silent films look like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen a few, and the acting, a lot of it is from the eyes. You know, they're made up so that their eyes look massive.
Yeah.
And,
and Gloria's got massive eyes.
Massive
eyes.
Exactly. So, she says at one point, he's like, we didn't need dialogue, darling. We had eyes. We acted with our eyes. And it really comes across in the performance. I mean, what a fantastic... I'm going to say it again. What a fantastic performance.
And of course, for Gloria, this was a comeback, just similar to what Norma's wishes. She was actually having it.
Yeah. Although, interestingly, I mean, their character, Norma and Gloria, they kind of had very similar kind of lives in the 20s. She had this opulent mansion. There's a point in the film where she says, I used to get 10,000 fan letters a week. And she actually did used to get 10,000 fan letters a week. But the difference is that whereas Norma kind of just fades into the obscurity in Hollywood, but dreaming of the former stardom, Gloria actually moved to New York and kind of started a new career in radio and television. So
went where the money went and saw the future.
Exactly.
But she, I mean, from what I understand, so she understood there was enough similarity to appreciate. Yeah, there was a truthness to that performance.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a feeling that you got that she had lived through, obviously not the extremes of that, but she either appreciated it or perhaps had seen other people.
Yeah.
You know, other stars who hadn't perhaps had that.
Definitely. And the film, it almost feels like it's painting a truthful picture of what life was like in the 20s. Mm. The fact that it features so many actual stars from the 1920s playing themselves.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were approached for the Swanson role. Well, there's kind of conflicting reports about who was approached and who
Greta
wasn't.
Garbo wasn't.
Garbo was apparently approached and turned it down. I think Mary Pickford was approached as well. There were a few people that kind of were in the frame for it. Although I think Billy Wilder also denies that he had anyone else in mind. So it's a bit. Yeah. It's not quite sure what the truth is there.
Yeah. To be honest, they're all great performances in this film.
Yes.
You know, William Holden, as we said in the trivia quiz earlier, he was getting work, but certainly there was a feeling that he had not perhaps achieved his potential, that he had shown a lot of promise that had not really lived up to the career he had. But this changed things totally.
Yeah.
And he ended up having a very successful 1950s. Mm-hmm. And he's great in this.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. I mean, he's not a likeable character by any means.
No, not at all. Joe is shown to be, well, he takes advantage of her. He openly decides to try and take advantage of this crazy rich old woman.
Exactly. And, you know, particularly towards the end of the film, he says some really horrible things.
Yeah.
And all the way through, actually, he's full of these kind of snide put-downs of Gloria, yet never quite it has the courage to actually tell her the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, not a very nice person, really.
No, not at all. But you kind of feel for him.
Yeah.
Because you feel him slipping in further and further into this world. They can't escape.
I think the film has a great sense of claustrophobia.
That when he finally runs off from her and goes to the party during the New Year's Eve sequence. He goes to that party full of young people dancing around.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? He's leaving? And there's almost like... Oh, he could just go, because you really do feel he's trapped there somehow.
Exactly, yeah.
That he can't escape.
Yeah, it's the house is more like a morgue, isn't it?
Yeah,
really? You know, it's like a mausoleum to a past. And yeah, it just feels really claustrophobic. I think the way it's shot as well really emphasises the fact that there's a lot of heavy drapes everywhere.
Mm-hmm,
you know, it feels heavy.
Yeah.
Like that everything is weighted down. Like there's an inertia to the house.
Yeah, a decay.
Exactly.
That's infecting him. And
they even did things like they sprinkled dust in front of the camera lens to create a sense of mustiness in the room, you know, just to kind of give it that feeling of decay.
Well, I mean, the film opens with a dead body and within 5 minutes you're watching a funeral.
Yeah, it's pretty ghoulish, morbid.
There is something of the Addams Family about her, isn't there?
Oh,
and the
definitely.
Butler
yeah.
as well.
Yes.
Eric's butler, yeah. There is a sense of...
I wonder if the Addams Family was inspired by Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, I don't know. It's possible, I suppose. There is that kind of gothic Americana.
Definitely. And there's a lot of Uncle Fester in Eric von Stroheim, Max the butler.
Yeah. It's weird. LA, it's sunny all the time, hot all the time. Mm. Yeah, you do equate it with... I mean, if there are vampires living anywhere in America, it'll be New Orleans and LA.
Yeah, definitely.
You can't imagine them in Seattle.
No. No, they wouldn't go there for the weather, really, would they?
But, it is a great tale of old Hollywood. Mm. Yeah, there's a truth to this. And, reading David Niven's autobiography, he really captures that kind of pre-war film industry in the gossip and the fact that Norma's full name, Norma Desmond, I think Desmond is actually the surname of someone was shot. It's like it was a big scandal in the 1920s. It was never solved. I think it was a writer or a producer or something who was shot. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the film, where you see the kind of gossip columnists, she was actually the real gossip columnist of. She was actually a real LA gossip columnist. Right, okay. There were basically two big ones. And sadly, their names escape me now. But dominated, yeah. Like yeah. Basically, if you got on the wrong side of them, they could destroy your career.
Yeah.
And David Niven talks a lot about them in that book. And really interesting to these two kind of women who had this enormous power. Mm. I suppose they're the equivalent of who's the guy who has that blog.
That guy who has that blog.
Yeah, no, it's
you know, I need more
name.
To go on. I need more to
Freddie
go
Hollywood,
on.
Something like that. I don't know. Whatever his name is. But, and that's... It captures... Not only does it capture... Yeah, despite the fact that the film is made in 1950, I don't know, there is an echo of 30s and 40s Hollywood.
Mm. It's a fantastic kind of exercise in nostalgia. Mm. For the time, and now looking back, it's even more kind of nostalgic because you're nostalgic for a time that's looking back to a time.
It's a film that's looking back to the silent era. Now we're looking back to the kind of 1950s Hollywood.
Mm.
And actually, bizarrely, one of the things that really made me think of old Hollywood and was the funeral of the chimpanzee.
God, that was a weird bit.
A weird bit, but
great.
Straight away I was just like, of course you would have a chimpanzee. Because like they would have these, they were like monarchs, weren't they? They were crazy kings and queens. They had bizarre things like that. And also, there is something about the chimpanzee. I just thought of Cheetah from Tarzan.
Yes.
Yeah.
What happened to Cheetah from Tarzan?
I don't know. Wasn't one of them? Wasn't one of the monkeys? The one of the chimpanzees? Like, didn't he release a book about 5 years ago? Yeah, they did a biography of him. Because
really?
He's worked with loads of big stars and loads of films, and he's lived to a ripe old age.
Wow!
He loves smoking cigars. There's like there was a picture of him smoking a cigar wearing a hat. Yeah, I think he was one of the cheetahs.
If anyone,
I think he's actually the son of the original cheetah.
Son of cheetah.
Son of cheetah. They both played cheetah though. So,
what?
Yeah, I know. Crazy, eh?
You're blowing my mind.
But yeah, it was really. Listeners, check. Yeah, if anyone knows the name of that book, it was released. I think about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay,
but it did make me think of that, and I always think of Tarzan films as very early. Mm. I don't know, very early kind of Hollywood films, early action films.
Yeah,
I guess they were, weren't they?
Full of loads of animal cruelty.
Let's not dwell on that. So I don't think there's any real weaknesses to talk about. So I guess the question is, would you recommend it?
Well, I certainly would.
Good.
And I'm sure Connor would second me on this one.
Indeed, and I would third you.
I'll third you in a minute.
I think it is a great film. It's evocative of that period of Hollywood and that gossip and the faded glamour of those stars.
Mm.
But wrapped or told through that is a very human and interesting story of someone who just can't quite let go of the past.
A domineering yet inherently fragile woman.
Yeah, exactly. She's horrible, he's horrible, yet you feel for both of them.
And they deserve each other in a weird way.
Yeah, they do. They do deserve each other, yes.
Yeah, watch it if you've never seen it. It's fantastic.
So, before we finish, just want to mention our secret sponsor for this week.
Yes, so our secret sponsor this week is Forgotten Film.
Forgotten Films, you can follow him on Twitter. At Forgotten Films with a Z.
With a Z. Crazy man.
And his blog is www.forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com.
Yeah, I had a quick look at it earlier. Fantastic. Really good. There was a film starring Sammy Davis Jr. and, oh, I forgot the other actor now. It was a white actor.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Salt and Pepper, it was called, from 1970 something.
Well, you just showed me one picture of Sammy Davis Jr. kind of just in the most like late 60s garb you can possibly imagine, playing a guitar while Go-Go Girl dances next to him.
I need to watch this film. I need to watch it. The fact that it's called Salt and Pepper alone makes me want to watch it.
So yeah, do check out Forgotten Films.
Yeah. So if you've got any films you can recommend to us, please write to us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 101 Films and like our Facebook page at 101 Films.
And you can also look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
We'll see you next week, I guess.
Yeah, see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
It's nice. You've got a very girly bathrobe.
That's not girly. Why is that girly?
It's not as girly.
It's grey. It's man.
It's a bit too soft flannel looking.
What? So it should be like Hessian or something?
Quite. It should be painful to wear.
I'm going to put that in the podcast.